In the sweltering heat of Kingston, a young woman from Cuba stepped into Jamaica's most vibrant musical scene. She sang in church choirs and small clubs before becoming part of a landmark vocal trio. By 1966, she found herself beside Bob Marley, on stage, in harmony, and in love. But this story is not just about being married to a legend. It is about a fierce journey of survival, triumph, and transformation. Rita Marley took on the scars of an assassination attempt, raised 6 children, became the backbone of the Marley family, and built institutions that shaped culture. Along the way, she forged her own path, founding charities, launching a solo career, and preserving her husband's global legacy. This is her story. Part memoir, part movement, part testament to strength and devotion. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Birth of a Songbird and the Seeds of a Legend. Alfarita Constantia Anderson opened her eyes on July 25th, 1946, in Santiago de Cuba. Her mother, Cynthia Beta Jarrett, and father, Leroy Anderson, moved to Kingston when she was still an infant. She was raised by her aunt Viola in the gritty neighborhood of Trenchtown. It was a place of hardship, but also a rich musical heartbeat. In courtyard sessions, children sang doo-wop, gospel, mento, and the early stirrings of reggae. Young Rita found her voice in church, lit by flickering candles and warmed by soulful hymns. It was there she learned that song could heal, could unite, could become a language of hope. By her teens, she had joined the Solettes, a rocksteady vocal trio she formed with her cousin Constantine Walker and friend Marlene Gifford. They sang at talent shows, street corners, and eventually landed a recording session with Coxon Dodd Studio One. Their singles, Time for Everything, A Day Pon Dem, and Pied Piper, were raw and rich, broadcasting the optimism and pain of Jamaican youth. The Solettes were on their way to becoming rising stars in a local scene overshadowed by the Wailers, but soon to intersect with its most famous member. In a neighboring studio sat Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and Bunny Livingstone, recording as The Wailers. Bob, already experimenting with ska and soul, began inviting Rita and the Solettes members to lay down backing vocals for sessions. In time, Rita's big, warm voice caught Bob's attention. She recalled later that his interest came through shy letters, left with friends, until one afternoon she found him waiting backstage. She called it the start of a spiritual connection, more than physical, deeper than words. They married in early 1966. Rita, age 19, Bob, 21. The Solettes carried on with Rita joining the Wailers on harmonies. As Bob chased opportunities in Wilmington, Delaware, Rita stayed in Kingston. Pregnant with his first child and carrying the hopes of a couple forging a vision through rhythm and syncopation. Early marriage to the young singer brought new pressures. They welcomed 3 biological sons, Sadella, 1967, Ziggy, 1968, and Stephen, 1972, as well as adopting Rita's daughter Sharon, born 1964, and later, Stephanie. The music scene shifted. Group hierarchy changed. In 1973, after Peter and Bunny left to form solo careers, Bob created the I3s, Rita, Marcia Griffiths, Judy Mowat. They became his spiritual chorus, touring with him across Jamaica, Britain, and North America. But music and love were no shelter against political fire. In December 1976, just 2 days before the free Smile Jamaica concert meant to ease political violence, gunmen stormed the Marley home on Hope Road. Bob was grazed by a bullet, Rita was shot in the head, and manager Don Taylor was wounded. Yet Bob and Rita stood on stage 2 nights later, defiantly singing, She didn't collapse or groan. She held her place as anchor and vocalist. Together they delivered not just songs, but testimony of survival, of resistance. Behind the scenes of that concert, the hits and the tours, a woman's strength was rising. In the early 1970s, in a Kingston press had declared Bob Marley the king of reggae. But as the years would prove, the throne also belonged to a queen in her own right, Alfarita, Aunt Vi's daughter who became Rita. The seeds were planted for a legacy that would stretch beyond Bob's early death in 1981. Chapter 2. The I-3 Revolution and the Rise of the Queen. When the Wailers split in 1973, it could have been the end of something. Instead, it was the beginning of a new era, not just for Bob, but for Rita. He wasn't going to stop recording or touring, and he needed voices that could elevate his message, carry the weight of the sound, and match the intensity of the movement. That's when the idea was born, an all-female backing trio, the I-3s. It was Bob who reached out, but it was Rita who made it work. She brought in her close friend, Marcia Griffiths, a seasoned singer with roots in rocksteady and a sweet, soaring tone. Then came Judy Mowat, a powerful vocalist with a rich background in gospel and roots reggae. The three women balanced each other in energy, voice, and presence. They were not backup singers. They were guardians of the message. The I-3s debuted on Bob Marley's album, Natty Dread, in 1974. From the opening notes of Lively Up Yourself to the timeless soul of No Woman, No Cry, their harmonies added power and feminine spirit. It was Rita's voice you heard weaving under Bob's on tracks like Revolution and Them Belly Full But We Hungry. Her presence wasn't just musical. It was emotional. It was spiritual. They toured together across Europe and the Americas, becoming the backbone of the Marley Live experience. For many fans, the image of Rita swaying beside Bob, dreadlocks flowing, eyes closed in trance, was a symbol of strength and sacred rhythm. On stage, they were in sync. Off stage, things were more complicated. Bob's fame was growing fast, and so was the pressure. Women came and went. There were infidelities, open secrets, and public children. Rita, who had always held herself with dignity, absorbed the heartbreak quietly. Her faith in Rastafari and her belief in Bob's greater mission kept her grounded. She understood, perhaps more than anyone, that Bob Marley had become a vessel, a messenger of Jah, and that personal pain was part of the sacrifice. Still, she wasn't a bystander. Rita began writing her own songs, performing in her own right, and quietly managing the Marley household with strategy and grit. She started working on solo material, putting out songs like Play, Play, Play and Harambe. In these tracks, she wasn't just echoing Bob's voice. She was telling her own truth about womanhood, about struggle, about faith. She also began to lean deeper into her spiritual side. Her connection to Haile Selassie and Rastafari roots gave her strength when others might have walked away. She believed Bob's music was a divine calling, and she considered herself a part of that sacred mission. The I-3s weren't just performers. They were messengers, too. The 1970s were a golden age for reggae, and Rita stood at its very center. From Rastaman Vibration to Exodus and Kaya, her voice can be heard wrapping around every verse, holding space through each chorus. And in 1978, when the One Love Peace concert brought political rivals Michael Manley and Edward Seega together on stage in a powerful call for peace, it was Rita on the front lines again, singing through fire. But behind the curtains, something else was happening. Bob's health was beginning to fail. The cancer that began as a small wound on his toe was spreading. He refused amputation, citing his faith. By 1980, he was still performing, touring Europe and the United States, but his body was in decline. Rita saw it all. She was his witness, his companion, and in many ways, his anchor. In private moments, Rita says Bob would hum to himself in quiet rooms. She would sit beside him, touch his hand, and remind him that his work was not done. When he grew tired, she took on more of the family's responsibilities, raising their children, managing daily life, and preparing for what neither of them wanted to say out loud. As Bob's final tour unfolded in 1980, the tension was clear. At Madison Square Garden, Rita stood strong on stage, delivering vocals as if nothing had changed. But backstage, her heart was breaking. She saw the pain in his eyes, the stiffness in his movements. Yet still, they performed. His last concert came in Pittsburgh on September 23rd, 1980. Rita sang that night, every word carrying weight. She knew, they all did. Bob's time was coming to an end. In May 1981, Bob Marley died at the age of 36. For many, that was the end of the legend. But for Rita, it was the beginning of a promise she had made to herself years earlier, that his legacy would not die with him. And now, her own voice would rise, not just in song, but in action. Chapter 3. The Lioness Rises. Grief, Legacy, and Building a Kingdom. May 11th, 1981. The world mourned the passing of Bob Marley. Streets in Kingston overflowed with grieving fans. Tributes poured in from across the globe. But inside the Marley family, behind the public ceremonies, Rita was facing a storm of her own. She had lost her partner, her creative companion, the father of her children, and the face of a global movement. And now, the burden of legacy rested squarely on her shoulders. Bob's death was not just the loss of a man. It was the loss of a mission in motion. Bob Marley was the heart of a revolution, spiritual, cultural, musical, and Rita was the only one who had stood beside him from the very beginning. She had sung through the struggles, toured through the pain, and nursed him in his final moments. Now she was expected to carry his name, protect his empire, and raise a growing family, all while trying to find herself beyond being Bob Marley's wife. In the weeks after his death, Rita was left with little time to grieve. There were legal matters, royalties, record labels, competing interests, questions of who owned what. She realized quickly that if she didn't take control, Bob's legacy could be swallowed by outside forces. So she acted boldly. She established the Bob Marley Foundation. Its goal was to preserve not just his music, but his mission, education, empowerment, and social justice. She reopened Tough Gong Studios and set the foundation for it to become a hub of Caribbean music and a sanctuary for young artists. Rita wasn't just managing her late husband's estate. She was building a future for Jamaican culture. But this wasn't about business alone. Rita had always believed that Bob's voice was part of a larger divine plan. Now, her mission was to keep that message alive, and she would do it in her own voice, too. In the mid-1980s, she returned to her own music with new focus. She released the album, Who Feels It Knows It, in 1981. Just months after Bob's passing. The album featured tracks like Good Girls Culture and the emotional One Draw, a playful, bold celebration of ganja and Rastafari life that stirred controversy and acclaim. It became a hit in several countries and introduced Rita's solo voice to a wider audience. She toured Europe and Africa, not just as a Marley, but as a Marley in her own right. Fans saw a woman who had faced death, betrayal, fame, and loss, and still stood firm. Her performances were a blend of healing and empowerment. She sang of roots, womanhood, survival, and faith. Then, in 1986, she made her boldest move yet. Rita converted Bob Marley's Kingston home on Hope Road into the Bob Marley Museum. It wasn't just a tribute. It was a temple. She kept the bullet holes from the 1976 assassination attempt untouched, preserved Bob's guitar, clothes, notes, and sacred spaces. Tour guides were trained not just to explain, but to share. Rita wanted people to feel Bob's spirit, not just learn about it. That same year, she also returned to Ethiopia, the spiritual home of Rastafari. Her connection to Africa deepened. She began supporting charities and schools on the continent. She saw the movement not as Jamaican alone, but as African. And she knew Bob's vision had always been global. Through the 1990s, Rita expanded her reach. She established the Rita Marley Foundation, focused on education and alleviating poverty across Ghana and Jamaica. She helped fund scholarships, build schools, and support women's health programs. In Ghana, she adopted the village of Konkanuru as her second home. They called her Nana Rita, a title of respect meaning Queen Mother. But even as her influence grew, Rita never abandoned her musical roots. She continued releasing albums like We Must Carry On, 1991, and Harambe, 1996, each one a powerful mix of roots reggae, spirituality, and feminine strength. She never tried to replicate Bob's sound. Instead, she used her own, earthy, grounded, maternal, a sound that knew sorrow, faith, and joy. And at the center of it all were her children, Ziggy, Stephen, Damien, Sadella, and Sharon, all went on to become musicians, leaders, and cultural icons. Rita was never a stage mom, but she was a presence. She guided them with quiet fire, teaching them that Marley wasn't just a name, it was a responsibility. Through the Melody Makers, through solo careers, through their activism and business ventures, her children became living extensions of her strength. People often asked her why she stayed with Bob through the infidelity and pain. Her answer was always the same, because love is not perfect, but love is powerful, and purpose is everything. By the late 1990s, Rita Marley had become something rare in global culture, a woman who had once been a muse, but had fully become a movement. She was not just Bob's wife. She was the steward of a kingdom, a mother to six, a voice for millions, a lioness in her own right. Chapter 4. Africa Calls. From Zion Dreams to Queen Mother of Ghana. By the late 1990s, Rita Marley had given the world decades of music, love, and resilience. She had weathered the storms of celebrity, betrayal, and grief. She had raised children who now carried the Marley name on stages around the world. And yet, something inside her still felt unfinished. There was a calling, one that had been with her since she first heard Haile Selassie's name in her youth, since she first embraced the Rastafari faith. It was time to go home, not to Kingston, to Africa. Rita's deep connection to the continent was not born from politics or performance. It was spiritual. As a devout Rastafarian, she had always believed that Africa, particularly Ethiopia, was Zion, the sacred land of her ancestors. Bob had spoken endlessly of repatriation. Now, she would take the step he could not. She was not going just to visit. She was going to stay. In the early 2000s, Rita Marley purchased land in Konkanuru, a rural village in the eastern region of Ghana. At first, many thought it was symbolic, but Rita had a vision. She wanted to create something lasting, something that would link Africa to the Marley name forever. So she built schools, clinics, music centers, farms. She didn't bring fame. She brought function. Locals were stunned at first. Why would a world-famous woman, the widow of reggae's greatest icon, choose to live among them, to walk dusty paths, to learn twi, to eat cassava from the same pot? But Rita wasn't coming as a guest. She came as family. She invested in the lives of the villagers. She sponsored children's education, helped young women start small businesses, and revived local arts programs. She began a tradition of holding annual youth camps where reggae, poetry, and African history were taught side by side. Through the Rita Marley Foundation, Africa, she funded scholarships, housing programs, and maternal health care projects. In 2000, her work was recognized in a profound way. Rita Marley was officially installed as Nana Afua Adobeye, a traditional queen mother in the Manya Krobo district of Ghana. In this role, she was not a symbolic figure. She was expected to advise chiefs, mentor youth, advocate for the poor, and act as a guardian of cultural heritage. She took the role seriously. "When I walk the land," she once said, "I feel the voices of my ancestors rising from the soil. I hear them telling me, you have work to do." But Africa was not just a place of giving. It became a place of healing for Rita. In the quiet of Ghana's countryside, she found a peace that had escaped her for decades. She could reflect on her journey, from the chaos of Trench Town to the violence of Kingston to the spotlight of global tours. Here, there were no flashing cameras, no concert arenas, just earth, sky, and memory. She often spoke of Bob in those moments. She believed that had he lived longer, he would have made the move too. They had always dreamed of creating a global movement rooted in African consciousness. Now, she was making it real. In 2004, Rita launched the Africa Unit Concert Series, blending music and activism. These shows, held in Ghana, Ethiopia, and South Africa, were more than performances. They were declarations of unity, cultural pride, and diasporic healing. Artists from across Africa and the Caribbean came together on one stage. And always, Rita stood at the center, not as headliner, but as matriarch. She continued to produce and perform, even as age began to slow her step. Albums like Sunshine After Rain and Beauty of Gods carried messages of peace, struggle, and divine protection. Her voice, now richer with time, no longer chased hits. It chased healing. And in every room she entered, whether in Jamaica or Ghana, she was met with reverence, not just for who she had married, but for who she had become. For many Black women across the world, Rita Marley had transformed into a symbol of purpose through pain, power through patience, and leadership rooted in service. She was not just preserving Bob's legacy, she was creating her own. Still, even as she planted roots in Africa, Rita never turned her back on Jamaica. She traveled often between the two lands she called home. She remained a powerful figure in Caribbean culture, involved in charitable efforts, music rights, and youth programs. In both places, she was Mama Rita. But one of her most intimate projects was deeply personal. For years, Rita had carried stories in her heart, moments only she had lived. In 2004, she decided it was time to share them. The result was her autobiography, No Woman, No Cry, My Life with Bob Marley. The book revealed what the public never knew, the betrayals, the laughter, the near-death experiences, the sisterhood, the spiritual visions, the reality of living in Bob's shadow, and the slow but certain rise into her own light. Critics praised its honesty. Fans embraced its courage. But for Rita, it wasn't about fame. It was about truth. And truth, she believed, was a form of love. Chapter 5, The Gatekeeper, Defending the Legacy, Raising a Dynasty. In the years after her return to Africa and the release of her autobiography, Rita Marley took on a new role, one she never asked for but fully embraced. She became the gatekeeper of the Marley legacy. Bob Marley's music had become one of the most recognizable sounds in the world. His face was printed on posters, albums, t-shirts, skateboards, and coffee mugs. From Japan to Brazil, Europe to the Bronx, reggae lived on every street corner. But not all of it was authentic. Not all of it honored the message. Rita realized that legacy, if not protected, could be bought, watered down, and exploited. The global appetite for Marley was growing. Brands wanted licensing deals. Movie studios asked for rights. Politicians quoted lyrics they didn't understand, and in boardrooms across the world, people who had never met Bob Marley sat down to figure out how to profit from his name. Rita said no, over and over. She wasn't against sharing Bob's music, but it had to be done with purpose, truth, and respect. She worked with lawyers to secure copyrights, restructured the Marley estate, and ensured that her children were active stakeholders. She didn't just protect Bob's work, she curated it. And then there were the imposters, people who claimed to have been close to Bob, rewriting history in books, interviews, and social media. Rita didn't chase them publicly, but behind the scenes, she made moves to correct the record. She believed it was her responsibility not to rewrite history, but to preserve the truth. At the same time, her children were stepping into their own greatness. Ziggy, Stephen, Damien, Sadella, and Sharon weren't just writing the Marley name, they were expanding it. Ziggy Marley, born in 1968, took on the torch early. As the lead of Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers, he released chart-topping albums throughout the 1980s and 90s. With songs like Tomorrow People and Conscious Party, he fused reggae with pop, carrying forward the conscious message of his father, but in his own voice. Stephen Marley, quieter and more introspective, became the sonic architect behind many Marley family projects. He produced Grammy-winning albums, mentored young artists, and created a distinct style that mixed dub, hip-hop, and roots reggae. Damien Jr. Gong. E. Marley, Bob's youngest son, broke barriers in the 2000s. His album, Welcome to Jamrock, became a cultural explosion, raw, streetwise, and unfiltered. He became a voice for the voiceless, echoing Bob's revolutionary fire, but with a modern, defiant edge. And then there was Sadella Marley, Bob and Rita's first daughter. She became a fashion designer, author, and CEO of Tuff Gong International. She led the Marley brand into new realms, women's empowerment, children's books, philanthropy, and partnered with the Jamaican Olympic team to design athletic wear. Sadella was proof that Marley daughters were just as powerful as Marley sons. Sharon Marley, adopted by Bob after marrying Rita, remained deeply involved in the Melody Makers and served as a cultural ambassador in her own right. Stephanie, too, contributed behind the scenes, helping manage Marley family initiatives and projects. Rita watched all of this with quiet pride. She never took credit, but her fingerprints were everywhere. Her children's activism, humility, discipline, and creativity, those were lessons she had planted early. Through her, the dynasty remained rooted. But Rita didn't stop there. She continued pushing for social justice on a global scale. Through the Rita Marley Foundation, she funded clean water initiatives, women's shelters, school libraries, and health clinics across Ghana and Jamaica. She helped raise awareness around issues affecting the African diaspora, from poverty and education to cultural theft and economic inequality. In the mid-2000s, she helped spearhead the creation of a Bob Marley Performing Arts Center and gallery in Ethiopia, a long-held dream to create a space where African and Caribbean artists could meet, collaborate, and preserve their stories. Though delayed by bureaucracy and funding, the idea reflected Rita's belief in unity through culture. At international conferences, she spoke not only of reggae, but of repatriation, reparations, and empowerment. She urged governments and corporations to recognize the contributions of the African world, not just in words, but in policy and investment. All the while, her health began to slow her body, but not her mind. She moved more carefully, traveled less, but when she spoke, people listened, because Rita Marley had become more than a reggae icon. She was now a global mother, a voice of conscience, a living bridge between continents and generations. She often said, "I'm not the wife of Bob Marley. I'm the woman who walked beside him." And it was true. She had walked through fire, heartbreak, fame, and revolution. She had buried a king and then built a kingdom. Every time someone listened to Redemption Song or sang along to One Love, they were stepping into a story Rita helped carry through the years. Chapter 6, Flowers, While She Lives, Honors, Illness, and Immortality. By the late 2010s, Rita Marley had become something rare in public life, a living legend who had done the work and received her roses while she could still smell them. Across Jamaica, Ghana, and the wider world, people no longer spoke of her only as Bob Marley's widow. They referred to her by her titles, Mama Rita, Queen Mother, Empress, Foundation Builder, Cultural Warrior. Her life had become the embodiment of purpose through pain, faith through fire, and strength through silence. And finally, the world began to recognize that. In 2010, the government of Jamaica honored her with the Order of Distinction Commander Class, one of the country's highest civilian awards. Later, she received the Marcus Garvey Lifetime Achievement Award and was celebrated by the United Nations and African Union for her humanitarian efforts. These weren't vanity tributes. They were acknowledgments of decades of real, frontline work, of feeding children, building schools, protecting art, and inspiring generations. In Ghana, she continued to be revered not as a visitor, but as a queen mother. Locals in Konkanuru described her as someone who walked softly but changed lives. Young girls there knew her not from old Bob Marley records, but because she funded their uniforms, built their libraries, and taught them to speak their truth through poetry and song. Back in Jamaica, the Bob Marley Museum had become a sacred pilgrimage site. Every year on Bob's birthday, February 6th, Rita stood with pride as thousands of fans and artists gathered to celebrate his legacy. But many came just to see her, just to say thank you. Her children, now global icons, spoke often of her as the true force behind the family's unity. Ziggy once said, "If you know anything about our family, you know the root is Mama Rita." Damien called her the spirit that kept the fire burning when everyone else would have walked away. Yet even legends are not immune to time. In 2016, during a trip in the United States, Rita suffered a massive stroke. For a moment, the world held its breath. She was airlifted back to Miami for urgent treatment. Doctors were unsure whether she would walk again, speak again, or survive at all. But this was Rita Marley. She defied the odds. Rehabilitation was slow and difficult. For a woman who had spent decades touring, building, singing, and organizing, being confined to hospital rooms and wheelchairs was a cruel test. But Rita faced it like she faced everything else, with grace, faith, and quiet power. She refused pity. Instead, she focused on gratitude. In a public statement months later, she wrote, "Jah has spared me, and because I am still here, I will continue to serve, even if I have to speak less and listen more." Though her public appearances became rare, her presence never faded. She appeared in documentaries, gave intimate interviews, and participated in foundation events. Her mind remained sharp, her spirit intact. Meanwhile, the world began to honor her in more lasting ways. In 2019, Jamaica's prime minister declared that Rita Marley's legacy would be preserved in national archives alongside Bob's. Scholars began writing dissertations on her influence. Young reggae artists sampled her vocals and cited her as an inspiration. Authors began listing her memoir, No Woman, No Cry, as a key feminist text in Caribbean literature. And still, she gave. That same year, she helped fund the creation of a global Marley education initiative, which provided digital learning tools to underserved schools in Ghana, Ethiopia, and Jamaica. She oversaw, from her wheelchair, the building of a new music studio for girls in Accra, and provided grants for female entrepreneurs. Even in silence, she moved mountains. But behind the scenes, her family began to prepare. They knew the day would come when Mama Rita might no longer be there to lead. And so they listened. They preserved her interviews. They recorded her prayers. They documented her teachings because they understood her story was not just history. It was scripture. In a rare public appearance in 2021, Rita was wheeled onto the stage at the Bob Marley Museum to mark Bob's 76th birthday. She wore a regal white robe and golden head wrap. The crowd erupted. Some cried. Some shouted thanks. She smiled, lifted her hand, and whispered, "One love." That moment went viral, not because of spectacle, but because of truth. It reminded people that greatness isn't loud. Sometimes it sits quietly in a chair, having given everything it had to the world. As the sun set that evening, music played, children danced in the courtyard, and Rita sat surrounded by generations, some born long after Bob had passed. They didn't need to know every detail of her biography. They could feel who she was. She had become more than a musician, more than a wife, more than a queen. She had become a living symbol of legacy, grace, and faithfulness. Chapter 7. The Final Chorus. Echoes of a Queen. There are some people whose legacies fade as time moves on. And then there are others, rarer, quieter, whose influence only deepens with age, like roots twisting further into the soil, holding the whole tree steady. Rita Marley is one of the latter. As the 2000s unfolded, the world became more chaotic. Pandemics, wars, protests, cultural shifts. But through it all, Rita's name continued to rise, not just in tribute, but in invocation. In schools across Africa and the Caribbean, her foundation-funded books taught children not only about Bob Marley's message of unity, but about her message of service, discipline, and divine womanhood. Musicians who had never met her studied her harmonies. Activists in Ghana, Brazil, and Brooklyn invoked her words. Women who had carried too much, loved too deeply, and been overlooked too long saw her as a mirror. A voice that had once sung in church pews and sound studios had become a whisper inside millions of hearts. The Marley estate, long guided by her quiet counsel, had become one of the most successful artist-led cultural dynasties in history. Music, books, film, fashion, philanthropy, it was all structured by a legacy she had fiercely protected. But even more than the system she built, it was the value she passed down that endured. Humility, family, faith, integrity. Ziggy continued leading as both an artist and social voice. Damien pushed boundaries, working with artists from Africa to the USS. Sadella ran international projects with UNICEF and carried Marley branding into sustainable fashion. And across all their successes, the thread was clear. Mama Rita taught them how to lead with heart. As tributes rolled in, institutions began to solidify her legacy. In 2023, the University of the West Indies granted Rita Marley an honorary doctorate in cultural preservation and humanitarian service. That same year, Ghana announced it would name a major cultural arts complex in Accra after her, the Rita Marley Center for Creative Empowerment. Its focus, education, storytelling, and healing for women and youth through the arts. There were calls, serious ones, for her to be officially declared a national hero of Jamaica. Many argued that no one had done more to protect Jamaican culture across generations, to build bridges between Africa and the diaspora, and to uplift the voices of women and the poor. But if Rita heard these praises, she responded the way she always had, with humility. In a private message read by her daughter, she said, "I have only ever done what love demanded, what life required, and what faith allowed." In her quiet estate in Ghana, surrounded by grandchildren and local villagers who had come to see her as a second mother, Rita spent her later days in reflection. She listened to music, sometimes Bob, sometimes her own, often silence. She read scripture. She received visitors who came not for autographs, but for blessings. And often, she would close her eyes and sway to a melody only she could hear. Because for Rita, the music never stopped. It had been there from the beginning, in Trench Town, in Studio One, in smoky tour buses, in hospital rooms, in prayer circles, and now in eternity. When she passed, peacefully, gracefully, surrounded by family, the world mourned. Flags flew low in Kingston. Ghanaian elders wore ceremonial cloths. Reggae stations across the globe played Rita's voice on loop. But what was remarkable wasn't the grief. It was the gratitude. She had lived long enough to receive her flowers, to watch her children succeed, to return to her ancestral home, and to give all that she had without regret. In Trench Town, a mural was painted on the side of a school. Rita Marley, she sang, she built, she loved. At the bottom, in block letters, one draw, one heart, one queen. And in Ghana, a girl named Adobia, named after Rita's local title, walked into a classroom carrying a donated book. Her dream? To one day become a music producer and start her own foundation. She didn't know all the lyrics to Bob Marley's songs, but she knew Rita. She had met her once, just a handshake, but it changed her life. This is the real legacy. Not just the songs, not just the museums or awards, but the millions of lives touched quietly, lovingly, forever. Rita Marley's story is not just one of survival. It is a story of sacred endurance, of what happens when a woman refuses to be invisible, even while standing beside greatness, because she was greatness. And though the final chorus has played, her melody will never fade.